Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight. Is my sound well adjusted? How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Okay, sorry for late start tonight. I told you guys that I had some adjustments to do and we still don't know which days it's going to be, but sometimes I will be running a show later. All right, yesterday was a wonderful debate. If you've missed it, I highly recommend you go watch it. I will post the link right now in the regular chat. Very interesting. I like this guy. He was an ex-soldier, Counterpoint. I liked him because he was assumed and consistent. It's the first time I ever see this. This guy has fully integrated the cookery of serving as soldier for what he knows to be the globalist empire. And he's okay with this. He's like, you know what? Yeah, I'm kind of a cuck, but I'm serving these things because ultimately it leads to more collectibles item that I can buy and more economic goods, and I'm sacrificing my soul for these economic goods, and I'm all good with it. That's basically what he was saying. Of course, I'm exaggerating, but it's how I received it. So it was kind of a weird debate for me. I expected, often you have double standards and fallacies, but this guy was kind of consistent in his honesty. There was some double standard. The way he treats the American Empire action is very unjust with respect to Russia. It's like he's going to frame every in fact, he believed that there was not a single American intervention where civilians were targeted. Well, and that's the special word that he used, intentionally. But it's like, at some point, you know that when you run an American war, there is going to be civilian consequences. Oh, but they were not hit intentionally. And the problem with this little game is that Russia can play the same. You know, you can go for every single strike of Russia and say, oh, yeah, okay, but that wasn't intentional. And the fact is that with Russia, there's kind of it's possible to believe that they didn't intend a single civilian target. With America, with the story of Bill Clinton striking a medication facility in Serbia and Iraq, you see that downtown, you see explosions like among the skyscrapers and the big buildings. I mean, skyscrapers, maybe it's a little exaggerated. They are just high buildings. But you can see that those places were targeted by Americans. And if anything, you would attribute more potential for precision for American strikes than you would to Russia. Because part of the Russian strategy is built around artillery. So it's not as precise as those missile strikes. Although we've seen tonight some very precise strike to what the Ukraine side calls a shopping center, but really that shopping center had been converted into an ammunition facility, and they were storing a lot of missiles there. So we saw a big boom in Kiev. I will show you the videos. And we see from the explosion that there are, from the remains of the explosion, that there were missiles in there that were stored on the Ukrainian side. All right, join me on Entropy. It is my favorite platform for super chats. It is the right place to send me support tonight. If you'd like to support the show, Entropy super chats are the right way, or you can use the support button on Odyssey. Will Kiev get shelled like Mariupol? We are now in the Mariupol progression. We are now at the level of Russia demanding surrender of the people in Mariupol. They are saying, surrender now, you have 24 hours to do it. I don't know what will happen after this. Will the tanks roll in, or will there be just massive artillery being deployed? I don't know what's the intent of Putin, but clearly he's trying to get a resolution with the least amount of violence possible. The Russian ministers are saying, when we're saying surrender, we mean whoever this little gang that took over Mariupol, because they are treated as kind of terrorists or neo-Nazi battalions. And so they have now a few hours left to surrender, or else I don't know what happens. Nicholas Petrus says, does Counterpoint actually have a substantial audience who tolerates his incessant swearing? I found it incredibly annoying to listen to. I saw that a lot of people were bugged by his swearing. I'm not, because I'm really a liberal guy on that front, at least. I'm certainly not politically liberal, but I don't care about this. Some people use fuck as a punctuation mark, and I'm okay with this. By the way, great news for the show. We will have a couple of guests this week, starting with Ryan Dawson. The date has not been set yet, but I've reestablished contact with Ryan Dawson because I had sent him a DM on Gab, and he doesn't check his DM very often, but he finally got it. So now we're in contact. We're going to set something up. And you guys were insisting that I invite Edward Dutton. So Edward Dutton will be here on Saturday. However, we'll have a very special show time. It will be at noon Eastern time, because that's what he can do because he's an Englishman or something like this. Chronic Boom says, I swear all day, every day, but it's so bad when you're trying to get your point across. Yeah, and Chronic Boom, your super chat wasn't fully understood at first. When you said that he used the C word, you meant cunt, and he used this to talk about the Serbs, and it passed above their head. But I was like, I don't want to specify, I don't want to explain it to them because that might be a violation of YouTube rules. So I was like, I'm not even going to care about explaining it to them. But both Pedro and Counterpoints were totally fooled, totally not understanding of your super chat. There was a beautiful comment written by Trevor Myers. He says, no, not this one. Let me find it. I think I lost it. the comments were very good. Sandman says, JF is a very skilled debater. He never gives in to emotion, but uses it deliberately and sparingly in a rhetorical manner when necessary. His opponents almost always end up appearing as if they are flailing and flustered in the face of his ruthlessly logical energy and blunt willingness to say the unsayable. This provokes them into emotional outbursts, which they might not perceive as emotional, but which is apparent to the audience. For instance, I'm aghast, JF. I'm shocked. How can you say that, JF? I can't even. Literally shaking. You are a bad person, JF, etc. Yes, at the end of the debate yesterday, that's pretty much what we got. So that's pretty much what we got at the end of the debate yesterday. Just is astonishment and incapacity to respond. But I was like, hey, what I'm saying makes sense, so I'm fine. If what I say makes sense and the guy has no response to it, then I won the debate. I'm fine with this. Luke Jones is on Entropy. He says, hi, Jeff. Is there a correlation between homosexual and having a higher IQ? If yes, how many points difference on average? Yes, there is a small correlation. I think we're talking about the range of 3 to 10 points somewhere in there, but I don't remember exactly. I would have to consult the studies. And I believe that the reason why is actually not that homosexuals are more intelligent. I think that intelligence makes you more likely to end up in the school, and the school is more likely to make you gay. I believe that is the structure of the correlation. Now, this is not proven, but I believe that's the case. Because certainly so I believe that basically there are people in the pool of the population who would have the capacity to be a higher IQ, and who would also have the capacity to be gay, but they never will become neither. They will never gain the extra IQ point and will be protected from the university as a consequence, and therefore will be protected from becoming gay. I believe that's because that's how I resolve the fact that this correlation is also intercorrelated, so both variables are equally correlated also with education. So how do you explain this? There needs to be a triangle of causality here. So what is it? Well, I think that there's a bunch of people who in their teenage years, like they could become gay, but if they're not put in the university, they won't. And so if they're not educated outside of their heterosexuality, they go back to the average, they go back to the normal behavior on the sex side, and they don't gain the extra IQ point. But it's tentative as an explanation. There's lots of room there for hypothesis. Luke Jones also says on entropy, "Hi, Jeff. If I drink half a mug of herbal tea which has no milk or sugar, how many hours would it take before the remaining tea becomes undrinkable due to bacteria, etc.?" Oh my God. I think undrinkable is a very relative thing here. I think you could spend days and not die from drinking it. And then there's the question of which bacteria will infect it, and the question of how much time they will have to reproduce. So it's a, and at what point will they inseminate the tea? At what point will they penetrate the tea and start reproducing? All of these factors taken together, I'm pretty sure that there are scenarios in which you would put the tea there after boiling it and it would be good for months. But then if you're on an open space and there's lots of wind and lots of carrying of bacteria, then you increase your chance that it will be a bad bacteria. That being said, there being no sugar leads this... what you might very well have is that a colony of mold will show up on the surface of the drink, basically just draining the water from the drink and using other forms of energy to reproduce. So that's one possibility. But anywhere between, okay, it could be bad within 24 hours, but it could also still be good after months. It all depends on which bacteria and whether the... Let's not forget that only a minimal number of species of bacteria are truly dangerous for you. Most of the time, let's not forget we eat cheese that is grown with mold around it and mold inside of it, and that's not a problem. Tillman says, "Jeff, he thought he was going to own you on the Texas migration question, and you turned it on him. Jeff won." Yeah, and he even admitted, like, "Oh, well, fuck me." It's like, "Oh, I was trying to catch you." And this is, he was trying to catch me on, "Would you let Texas exit the US? And I was like, yeah. I mean, he didn't know me, but yeah, I'm totally for the breaking down of nations, and I don't want anyone to live with people they don't want to live with. So I was totally fine on this. But that's the advantage. See, he thought he had a gotcha, and you'll never find me falsely believing that I have a gotcha, because when I approach a debate, I'm a man with cognitive openness. I welcome my debate opponent as an independent being, and I respect all I would ask before I believe I have something on him. So when I win, it's like it's solid. Maybe I don't win all the time. Maybe I don't catch someone all the time in a contradiction, but I certainly don't go for bait. And he goes for bait. Chronic Boom says, "Is Counterpoints new here? Of course, JF would allow secession," laughing my ass off. Yeah, I think he just didn't know me. I think that these new Destiny clones on the centrist part They don't do much research, and especially when they see I don't have a Twitter account, it's like, oh, this guy doesn't exist. Therefore, it's like if you don't have a Twitch account or a Twitter account, it's like, oh my God, this guy doesn't exist. I cannot go to Odyssey to view the laying out that JF did for the last month of his view on an everyday basis. Top Criminal says, JF, would you consider trying to get Rocco Micic on the show? He's a rationalist who's red pill on IQ and HBD, who came up with a certain thought experiment that shall not be named. Well, I don't know if your presentation of him pleases me. If it cannot be named, can we really have a discussion with him? Okay, I'll keep his name in the list right here. Let me add it to my bookmark, but if it's an experiment that cannot be named, I don't know if it's an experiment that that we can talk about here on the show. Chronic Boom says, liar tip, never ask a question you don't know the answer to. JF tip, always assume you don't know the answer to the question you're asking. Yes, and there's so little people these days who think like this. It's like people have all these categorical boxes in which they try to fit the opponent, and I'm like, no, let the opponent speak for himself. And there's some magic happening when you use this approach, which is that when an opponent has been fairly represented and he looks stupid, that's a true win. That's a punch in the face, because you are working with the terms of the opponent. You're not inventing stuff. You're not saying, oh, so what you're saying is. You're really just working with what he gives you and slowly hanging him. That is my style of debate. It's always been. So it's not that hard not to lose a debate against me. But for some reason, it's still a good method. It still works 90% of the time. Zelensky says, World War III assured if negotiations with Russia break down. Shut the fuck up. This guy is fucking annoying. It's like, no, bro, you don't understand. NATO is currently building troops to circumvent any continuation of Vladimir Putin. You are being attacked, and it's just Ukraine. It is just this. Ukraine is getting attacked. This is not World War III. It's World War III because you want it to be World War III. It's World War III in your head. You wish it was World War III, but it's not. Your country is getting owned. This is what's happening, Zelensky, and no one is coming to help you. Because your association with your friends, they were really just interested at draining the best of you. And they were really not willing to stand up for you. They were not willing to protect you. You got fucked in every possible way by everyone. That's what happens when you sell your soul, when you're ready to give up your people and give up their lives as part of this conflict. And when you're willing to trade on the availability of natural resources from your nation to others and to make these dirty dealings that made you rich, Zelensky. But no, there is not going to be World War III unless America wants to cause it. For now, it doesn't look like they want to cause it. Disinformation. China says they're not providing weapons to Russia, instead hopes to de-escalate crisis. Is it your intent to go ahead and give a lifeline to Vladimir Putin? On Friday, President Xi Jinping and President Biden had a video call. It was candid, deep, and constructive. President Xi Jinping gave China's position very clear. That is, China stands for peace, opposes war. China is a peace-loving country. And they go on to say, it's disinformation. We don't give military assistance to Russia. So what do you, I mean, this has been continuously pushed as a narrative by the American side, by the media, or anonymous sources say. It seems to be all bullshit. Coach Red Pill is alive, but but he's getting shelled. Poor Coach Red Pill. I mean, he looks like he got older by like 100 years within 2 days. I mean, I love the guy, but like facially, he doesn't even look like Coach Red Pill anymore. Of course, there's a matter of angle. I understand that when you're on a setup where you film yourself from your desk, it's different than when you walk in the streets with a cell phone. But my God, Coach Red Pill totally getting shelled. Look at the little video we got from him today.
Hi. This is my favorite chocolate shop. As you can see, I don't know how well you can see it.
This is a place where Coach Red Pill just goes to eat chocolate. I mean, what kind of luxury is Coach Red Pill living in? I can't eat chocolate in a chocolate place. Are you kidding me? How much is the cost for this? But Coach Red Pill, it's his chocolate place. It's exactly where he's staying. Well, he's not staying in the chocolate place, but he's staying around it. And look at it, totally destroyed. The windows are gone and totally destroyed inside. So this is a 1 minute video. We lose the audio at some point, so we don't get to hear what Coach Red Pill says. But that is the situation right now for Coach. Putin lays out two most difficult demands of Ukraine amid ceasefire talks. The demand can be divided into two parts. Basically, there are six topics discussed. The first is Ukraine's neutrality, that is, its withdrawal from NATO membership. Second, disarmament and mutual security guarantees in the context of the Austrian model. Third is the process that the Russian side refers to as denazification. Fourth, removing obstacles to the widespread use of Russian in Ukraine. He told Turkish newspaper Hurriyet in an interview published on Saturday. So those are the themes. I mean, the question is, if Ukraine goes for a security model where it says we will be neutral, but if anyone attacks us, including Russia, the UK will come and protect us. The problem is, this seems to be what Zelensky wants in terms of a deal. But then the question is, will the Ukrainian society, in its self-determination, drift away from Russian culture, if that is allowed? Because once you have the protection of the UK, you have a guarantee that Russia will have no leverage on you militarily, or if they do, they will have to face the UK forces. That creates a big problem for Vladimir Putin. So I would be surprised if he accepted this. But if he accepts this, perhaps it would be a sign that he thinks he believes that the conflict is costing too much and it's not worth it anymore. But there is a big problem, which is Ukraine will take its own direction. And that direction, even if they were to show a constitutional change that makes the use of Russian protected, it's still a society that can oppress its Russian minorities in a thousand ways. Other than keeping them from using their language, you know, with the Azov battalion around, they can, and with the state oppression by choosing to exclude people from bank services, they can hurt the Russians without hurting the Russian language, see? And so I'm afraid that this is a subterfuge, and I hope that in the negotiation, Vladimir Putin will be aware that this is what it's headed for. Superfluity of naughtiness. That's his nickname. He sent a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. The show relies on your support. He says, how do we counter the invasion narrative that we constantly hear from the right, left, media, academia? Well, here's my approach. And I had some of this in... You know what? If you want to know the real professional way to do this, go watch the debate of yesterday, because I did the most beautiful expression of it. You don't come out and say, oh, it's not an invasion, because then it's going to be, oh, there are signs that it's an invasion and there are signs that it's not an invasion. Go with the thing that you can know for sure. And what we can know for sure is that we don't know for sure. So the way I approached the other debater was claiming invasion, invasion, invasion. I raised a doubt. I said, you know, looking at the troop movements, I'm not 100% sure that Vladimir Putin wants to micromanage and dominate Ukraine society. And there's nothing they can say against this. Like, first, is it even in the interest to micromanage Ukrainian society? Is it cost effective to do so? Like, do you want a Russian tank stationed on every street of every city for the next 100 years? Because that's what it's going to need. Ukraine is really unmanageable. So you just drop the doubt, and they don't have anything they can say about it. And in fact, Counterpoints was obligated to be open to my suggestion. And he was like, oh, at the end of the debate, he said, you know, what JF mentions makes me review my conception of Russia's strategy, and I'll be looking at how things develop, and perhaps that's a possibility, you know. Perhaps Vladimir Putin is only interested in the leverage provided by the encirclement without the micromanagement aspect, without fully controlling the society. Because let me tell you, it would be so much easier for a Vladimir Putin to have Zelensky come back as the president with a negotiated settlement and have him lead the nation going forward. Because if you install a puppet government, the government will be seen as illegitimate. The Ukrainian people will be deploying Molotov cocktails and all forms of resistance just to fuck things up. And we'll have 10 or 20 years of instability in the region. So that's how you approach it, by being opened mentally. On the other hand, you don't deny this could be an invasion. I think the way you properly analyze Vladimir Putin is you look at what he does from a perspective of the options kept open. Is the siege of Kiev an option of invading Kiev? Potentially, yes, but it doesn't have to. Is the siege of Kiev potentially just an encirclement for the purpose of leverage while the actual military takeover happens in the south of the country? Could be. That's an option that's opened. So understand things instead of things being a fax. Think of them as options that could happen. Stephen Robinson is on Entropy. He says, Jeff, Counterpoints mentions that the Azov battalion is 2,500 soldiers. This is in contradiction to the Duran and CRP, who put the numbers upwards of 50 to 80,000. What do you think? Yeah, you know, I don't engage in the weeds like this, because the fact is, whether it's 2,500 or 80,000, in the end, it's a problem. It's a problem for Russians in the Ukraine. So it's still a legitimate justification for war that they exist. I mean, from the perspective of Putin. So I didn't at all contest the number, but 2,500 seems to be an extremely narrow, just... I don't think it's possible that the Azov battalion has collected the fame across the years for all of their action and that they would only be 2,500. I mean, this is a battalion that has been operating like a... over all mafia, over all of society in the southeast of Ukraine, committing numerous murder, torture, publicity actions. They have symbols, they have a handshake with President Zelensky. I mean, their leader is literally integrated to the Zelensky administration officially. If that would all be accomplished by a bunch of 2,500 people, I would be extremely surprised, and I would side more with the large number estimations from CRP and Duran. Guy from V says Azov is much more. Also, Azov is only one of the battalions, six or seven more with over 25 to 30K. Yes. Podolsky, District of Kiev, video from the advisor of the head Ministry of Internal Affairs. So Podolsky has gotten it by a very precise strike. That is the fire afterward. So we're starting to see center of Kiev getting it, and that is an indication that Kiev as an entity of resistance is getting demilitarized. The reason I would do this strategically is if I intend to penetrate Kiev or shell Kiev going forward. So normally with the Russian army, what we've seen is aerial strikes, missiles, and then shelling. Aerial strikes and missiles for very precise, like ammunition deposition, depots kind of thing, to neutralize the big stuff, and then shelling to induce suffering over the long term and to eventually crack the defense. We have seen someone from this explosion in the ammunition depot, which had been installed in a shopping center. So the Ukrainian army has taken over so much civilian infrastructure that they are making these civilian infrastructure targets, legitimate military targets. And here was one person who was stuck under the rubble, but thankfully he made it alive for now. He seems to be doing good, so good for him. He has survived the crumbling of the place. We have a security camera that has captured the strike on video. Amazingly, the shockwave seems to have pushed the camera so that it would capture more of the explosion. So that was a camera of the very shopping center that was targeted, although it seems to be fixated to a separate building. We have evidence that this was truly hosting ammunition. I'll show you a picture later. So here's the aftermath of the explosion. Shopping center very much destroyed and fire onto the ground. If you want to see it from another perspective, this is a security camera, although the flash basically blinds more than what you can see really. But interestingly, we see that it was a vertical missile falling. You see the missile right here falling. So I don't know, people speculate that the luminous effect of the missile could be simply an artifact of the speed. By the way, yesterday when I presented the Dagger missile, the missile that's the hypersonic missile being used by Russia, Sprocket raised an important point because I said boom, it exploded. But the fact is, the boom we heard was probably not the explosion, it would be the sonic boom. So when something travels at higher than the speed of sound, you hear a sonic boom from their mere displacement in the air. So the boom that we've heard and the second boom that we've heard would be secondary and primary sonic booms rather than what I thought it was, which was the explosion itself. Very well seen, Sprocket. And that seems to be the same viewpoint, but not in black and white, so we get to see a little more information on the color image. Oh yeah, this one needs to be forwarded, I believe, here. And here too, we have seen the missile. Right here, you can see the missile coming. Extreme luminous flashes. Of course, this can be exaggerated by the camera. These flashes typically can be amplified by the camera because the camera can be set to a degree of sensitivity that makes everything look white. This was the building being targeted before the explosion, so you can see it's a shopping center, but it had been turned into a military storage facility. In Mariupol, the shelling has continued, further destruction of residential buildings. Firestarter says, what was the target? Well, I just, probably you wrote this before I show it, but it was this. It's called Retroville, middle of Kiev, and it's a big shopping center, but it had been turned into a missile storage facility for the Ukrainians. I'm trying to find the, I can't find, but I've seen a missile that on a picture that was posted that would be on the ground beside what we have seen. So, oh yeah, there it is. So that's one of the missiles that were stored on the Ukrainian side. It's one of the most powerful missiles on the Ukrainian side, and it was present in the Retroville explosion. So presumably the strike was successful at targeting military installations. Aid to a Russian collaborator, Saldo Pavel Slobodzikov, was shot and killed in Kherson. We're seeing the Ukrainian side starting to shoot on people who are not quite soldiers. So my big problem with this is, how do you determine that he was a Russian collaborator? It's the dirtiness of war, where there are people abandoning their side and providing of information to the other side. But like, if my country was dominated by another force, I may not collaborate with them in the sense of giving them info on how to kill my compatriots, but I may show some openness to them, you know? Like, I may just, wave the white flag and say, expect peace from me. Would that make me a collaborator? Would my countrymen eventually shoot me down because I did that? I'm worried about this. And it's very close to what we've seen, because I watched recently the Quentin Tarantino movie, Inglourious Bastard, with Mamajeev, and it's a good movie, although it's completely crap and it's totally like anti-history, and it's just like, oh yeah, it's a movie about revenge against the Nazis and it didn't happen, but it's okay, it's a fantasy of revenge. But in that fantasy of revenge, there are German soldiers wanting to betray their side, there are people on the other side who want to side with the Germans. So there's always this, whose side are you on for real? An evacuation has been happening in Brovary. So 17 buses and about 300 cars from Tarasivka to Brovary. And we can see civilians being packed into these buses, so they will be out of the way for military operations. 3 wounded as a result of Russian army shelling on the Zhytomyr region. The Zhytomyr region is a region west of Kiev. and this is one of the rockets that has landed there. So as I've indicated in the debate yesterday, to me, a satisfying conclusion to this war would be to split Ukraine at the Zhytomyr level, which would mean Kiev is on the Russian side, but it's a little bold. I don't know if Putin will want to be as bold as this. Okay, well, I called it a rocket, and Linux Foo says that's a bomb, bro. Rocket, bomb, I don't know the difference. I'm not a military expert. That being said, yesterday, amazingly, I was talking with an ex-soldier on the debate, and some people have complimented me because it seems I had more understanding of military strategy than him. All of his military strategy analysis was the one of CNN, which is, oh my God, Putin is failing. Putin, the troops have low morale. And I was like, don't you think that the facts on the ground could be interpreted in a different lens, in a different light? And just to be open to the idea that time is on Putin's side and that the stranglehold on these cities is increasing and is getting stronger. Head of the Kharkiv administration, Russian troops likely seized humanitarian aid convoy on the way to Vovchansk. So that's one of the strategy we might see. You know, the pro-Ukraine people keep saying on social media, oh my God, Putin thought that this war would end in 5 days. That's why he gave only 5 days of food rations to his soldiers. Maybe Putin also had the plan that it could extend over a long amount of time, but that perhaps Russian troops are trained to benefit from food that is available from the local places. So we've seen Russian soldiers go into stores and feed onto the reserves of the Ukraine side, take whatever they want in a store, and we might see them intercept humanitarian convoy, and they will have plenty of food to last more than 5 days. So again, this is this low-level analysis that we see in pro-Ukraine social media, where you haven't thought this through. You know, I would expect soldiers of the Russian army to be trained, to be properly capable of self-sustaining, especially in urban fighting environments. This is not the middle of the jungle where you could eat something on the floor and it's toxic and you die. This is Ukraine, with grocery stores, all sorts of places you can get into, break the door, and eat infinitely. Even if things would go to waste, there would still be cans, I suppose, there. Tillman says, JF, have you seen the picture getting taped to poles and tortured? Yeah, apparently it's a tradition in Ukraine where they take people who are believed to have committed theft or things like this, and they put saran wrap around them and they attach them to a pole. And very often they will drop their pants so that their ass is exposed. And as the members of the public pass, the people who are suspected of theft will get whipped on the ass or tortured in various ways or insulted or spit on. It's funny, and it shows you what Ukraine is, really. It's not a place of due process. Because I don't take issue with punishment. I think punishment is great if you've really done something wrong. But how many of these people are wrongly convicted by this population-driven system? There's no way to know. Eventually, they might be torturing just people for being Russian because they are suspected of being Russian collaborators. So there's always this double edge with punishment where you want to be sure you punish the right people. Then I don't mind about punishment being relatively harsh. But even that is not a harsh punishment. I don't know exactly how they eventually get released from these saran wraps. Do they have to self-release, or is someone coming to their help? And if you help them, what happens? Do you get punished by the local mob? To me, it's disgusting. This country needs to be fixed. That was my point also in the debate yesterday. Russia's defense ministry. Ukraine has until early hours of March 21 to give Russia its answer on surrendering Mariupol. So it looks like Russia is preparing something for Mariupol. Is it a straight up descent of tanks into the town and just cleaning building per building to make sure that there are no armed resistance? Or is it something like an aerial strike or something like this? In any case, when you give an ultimatum like this, it's like you decided that it was over. Russia has decided that fucking around with Mariupol is over. They're going to win tomorrow. And this can happen through surrender, or it can happen through fighting whatever Russia has in store. All right, what else do we have in the news? So that was it for our war review. Escobar, the rules-based international order is unraveling much faster than expected. The rules-based international order, as in our way or the highway, is unraveling much faster than anyone could have predicted. The Eurasia Economic Union and China are starting to design a new monetary and financial system, bypassing the US dollar. Saudi Arabia, perpetrator of bombing, famine, and genocide in Yemen, weaponized by US, UK, and EU, is advancing the coming of the Petroyuan. India, third largest importer of oil in the world, is about to sign a mega contract to buy oil from Russia with a huge discount and using a ruble rupee mechanism. The US is about to get isolated from a large section of the world's transaction, and now the American people will experience what it means when the rest of the world has gone their own way. And I celebrate this. I think it's very exciting because much of the American aggression onto this world and onto its own population is funded by this indirect mechanism that somehow people assume and have to pass through the USD. When the USD is just an afterthought for interacting with the transactional market of the US, something else is happening, and societies will be developing in the East, China, India, Russia, and they will sell you what they want and at the price they want. That is a beautiful thought to consider. Firestarter says NG Tao, nations going their own way. Exactly. And we'll see to what extent this works. But if it works, it means the end of America as a superpower. This will hurt so much more than any military conflict you could have had with the US. It will be hurting at the bottom of the functioning of society. And on top of it, it's happening after the US has essentially abandoned its manufacturing capacity. So basically, the US makes itself dependent on the rest of the world for manufacturing, and then the grass is cut under the feet of the US from a natural resource perspective, oil as a first and most important item. And on top of it, you have the environmental fight from the inside of the US that is cutting the grass under the feet of oil production even more. Now, all of this, what it may lead to, is life to become unbearable from inside the US to the point where people see no other option than vote the Democrats out and vote for someone like Trump who would push for further oil production and release further lands for oil production and make sure that projects like blocking a pipeline don't happen. I see only positive here. Even if the US was to get out of this quagmire by increasing its oil production, that would be more sovereignty for the US. It would be also a kind of final blow to the leftist environmentalist perspective of we have to block any project we see, when in fact, you should be intelligent about it. People are going to consume oil no matter what. You should be intelligent about transporting this oil in the most efficient way, being a pipeline. Shenzhen scrambles to ease lockdown as port congestion persists. The CCP continued to ease lockdown restrictions on Shenzhen over the weekend as the municipal government claimed that the spread of COVID in the city is overall controllable. So it seems that the excitement that was there at the beginning where they locked down entire cities, they seem to be calming down a little bit on it, and that is a positive thing. Agent PSI says African dependence on wheat from Russia and Ukraine. Yes, there is apparently Ukraine is a large exporter of food and wheat, among other things. So, and it's also an exporter to Europe. So there will be impacts, definitely. So that is it for today. I wanted also to highlight this comment by Sprocket from yesterday. He said, if this is the real hypersonic missile and it looks right to me, the bang will not be the missile hitting the target, nor the warhead going off, but the sonic boom, the second bang to a secondary sonic boom. The faster the object travels above the speed of sound, the louder the sonic boom. Secondary sonic boom, which arises from long-range propagation in a non-uniform atmosphere. So someone was asking on the regular chat whether there is such a thing as a secondary sonic boom. It seems that Sprocket claims there is, and it's due ultimately to... You have one sonic boom, but then you have atmosphere differences. So you have, I don't know, air may be more dense here, but less dense here. So one sonic boom comes at a certain speed. The secondary sonic boom comes at a different speed, which represents the energy that passed through a different path of atmospheric density. That's how I understand what Sprocket is saying. I'm not an expert on these questions. So that is it for tonight, Buzz. Will Kiev get shelled like Mariupol? Two people say yes. Three people say no negotiation will happen. And no one said no, Putin will withdraw. The problem with negotiation is I don't see much willingness on the two sides to... to engage in genuine negotiation. Like, Zelensky could have had a beautiful deal at the very beginning of this conflict. He just had to abandon DPR, LPR, say, I'm not going to be in NATO. He would still have had an army. He would have recognized Crimea. I mean, he cannot get any better with time. So as time progresses, Maybe he's not going to be able to get away with a negotiated deal without giving up Mariupol, for example. Maybe Kherson. So it looks like time is all on the side of Russia and nothing is happening that's good for Ukraine. So it depends on the stubbornness of Mr. Zelensky, but I think he's too stubborn for the good of Ukraine. Much love, everyone. Don't forget, this week we have some amazing guests. Edward Dutton will come on Saturday. And Ryan Dawson, I still don't know, but perhaps Wednesday. We'll see with him, maybe next week, but he'll be there very soon. Can't wait to talk to these people. Bye-bye, everyone. And don't forget to join the Subscribestar or the Patreon if you'd like to support the show on an every month basis. Bye-bye. Thank you.